This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
I grew up in the suburbs of Houston, Texas. In my junior year at Bel Air High School, we read Camus' The Stranger and The Myth of Sisyphus. Sisyphus is an essay about absurdity, and the essay's genius is the power of that metaphor, the poor guy pushing that rock up to the top of the mountain, only to have it roll back down and have to start all over again. Life is absurd and irrational and meaningless. That's exactly how I felt at 17. The suburbs were absurd. School was absurd. Camus was a Frenchman growing up in Algeria, and I think that displacement had a lot to do with his sense of absurdity. I felt displaced in the suburbs of Houston. The Myth of Sisyphus spoke to me. Inspired by Sisyphus, I bought a copy of Sartre's Being and Nothingness. It was the thickest book I'd ever owned. I made an attempt to read the first page. But other than the title, Being and Nothingness, Being and Nothingness, how much more do you need to read? I was a debater in high school, and when I was partnered with the most beautiful and intelligent girl debater, I started carrying around that copy of Being and Nothingness in my debater's briefcase, taking pains to ensure that she would accidentally see it. I hoped that seeing the Sartre book, she would immediately sense great intellectual depths, and that would somehow lead to romance. Lugging around that copy of Being and Nothingness brought me nothing like a kiss. Existentialism is probably not the best way to get girls. High school ended, the briefcase was put away, the unread copy of Being and Nothingness forgotten, and I embarked full sail on a Sisyphean quest to be a filmmaker. That I thought this a practical career choice was, well, absurd. My choice was a conscious decision how I wanted to spend my life. I had a passion for watching movies, and I had a passion for making them. My choice to be a filmmaker was existential, but also inside the world of a movie, characters have existential moments when they make what are defining choices. A good Western is lousy with them. Stagecoach, Fort Apache, The Searchers. Existential all, and John Ford would have spit in your eye if you'd uttered such an epithet as existential. The road movie, a quintessential American genre, is existential. It Happened One Night, Easy Rider, Sideways. But there are roads everywhere, and the road movie is universal. La Strada, Alice in the Cities, Weekend. There is something primordially cinematic about a road movie, because it moves. In the road movie, the heroes, or anti-heroes, leave the familiar and move through unfamiliar landscapes and experiences. Unmoored from the quotidian and the familiar, in a successful road movie, the protagonists must come to terms with who they are, with what their essence is. They are forced to by the journey. And making a film is taking a journey. François Truffaut, referencing John Ford, said that shooting a movie was like taking a stagecoach journey. At first, you hope for a beautiful journey, but by the end, you're just hoping to survive the trip. What other existential films do I like? Calling a film existential can be like calling a story Oedipal. You can apply the term to almost anything. Doctor Strangelove, existential. Singing in the Rain, existential. Toy Story 3. Down this path lies madness. I do believe that man, by man I mean me, must create meaning in the face of a meaningless, indifferent, if not hostile world. And for hostile, indifferent, and meaningless, what better place to be existential than Hollywood? The unringing telephone. Perhaps not every phone is existential, just the unringing phone in my apartment. Sartre said that existence precedes essence. I read that on Wikipedia, not in one of his books. The telephone, sitting at rest, unringing, is supremely indifferent. Its existence precedes its essence. The silence of God? In Hollywood, it's the silence of the telephone. Anyway, no one called to offer me a movie to make. I had to be existential, proactive. I wonder how Camus would have reacted to the word proactive. All my adult life, I have been self-employed. That means when I wake in the morning, it is completely up to me how I spend the day. Without a job to report to, every day is an act of choice. In the broadest strokes, I assign myself a task to make a feature film. I come up with an idea. I write a screenplay. I scrape together the money. I cast the actors. I convince a crew to work for free. I shoot the movie, edit it, and then I try to sell it to a distributor. If you are flogging around a script for years trying to get a movie made, then I guess essence precedes existence. The existence of the movie, that is. All this takes a long time. But every day I wake to the question, what do I do today? I steel myself with strong coffee, that quintessential existential drink, and I pick which rock to roll up the mountain that day. So on a primary level of existence, as a man alone in a room with a computer and a telephone, my daily life is one of existential choice. And the act of filmmaking itself is a succession of existential moments, moments of truth when defining choices are made. Unlike a play, which in theory can be staged an infinite number of times, a film gets made only once. It is highly specific to a place and a time, sort of like a life. It's a defining moment when an actor gets cast because this is the one and only person who will inhabit and incarnate that role forever. On the film set, beginning with the first take of the first shot, as the director, my day is a series of defining moments as I decide where to put the camera and what the actors do in front of the camera. When do I have a good take? When do I move on to the next shot? Do I really need this shot to make the movie? There's a phrase in movie making, on the day. On the day, on the set. I have one chance to get a scene right. What I decide to do on the day with the cast and the crew I have mustered is how the scene will stand for all eternity or for however long the copy of the movie survives. In the moment, the director decides, is this the right thing? Is this good enough? Is it the best it can be? Like a lifespan, there's a limited amount of time on a movie set, and moment by moment, I am making choices how to best spend that limited time. There's a heightened sense of time passing. There is an intense sense of being in the moment, and of getting the most out of each moment. Then come the somewhat more relaxed moments in the editing room, where I decide how to cut the film together. An editing choice is not quite existential because you can redo an edit, but it is existential to decide if a cut is final. Finality. Time and mortality. The dismaying limit of our lifespan, all part of the absurdity that Camus described. A little bit of being and a lot of nothingness. Death playing chess on the beach in Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal, back in the good old days when it was stylish to be broodingly philosophical. And the stylish Germans who gave the Beatles their defining mop-top haircuts? They called themselves exes. The iconic Beatle haircut was an existential haircut. It's not an evangelistic philosophy. There were never girls in black berets trying to recruit new members. Take the idea of heaven away and you lose a lot of appeal. And when the film is finished, at the end of the process, a movie has been made. Something has been brought into being in a meaningless, indifferent world that is quite content to exist without another movie of mine. The rock has been pushed to the top of the mountain, which means it's time to make another movie. The rock rolls to the bottom. Take a breath and pick another rock to roll back to the top. I just finished shooting Caffeine, a road movie, in England. In this case, existence did precede essence because the film co-stars my two children, Dot and Harry, so they had to exist before I could attempt to film their essence. For the first time on the set, I wasn't just the writer and director, I was also Dad. It's one thing to tell an actor to alter the cadence of a performance. It's another thing to tell my son or daughter. Dad, you're embarrassing me! No, I'm directing you. That's what a director does. I had to confront the two key strands of my life, intertwined. Who am I as a father, and who am I as a filmmaker? Maybe there are degrees of existential crisis, like the color codes for perceived terrorist threat. Green, orange, yellow, red. On the set with my children, I often felt in the red zone. But now my road movie is in the can, and all is green and good in the editing room. Dostoevsky's Notes from Underground, with its unnamed hero and its hyper-conscious first-person narrator, is regarded by those who regard such things as the first existential novel. But that didn't matter to me when I decided to make a movie version of Notes from Underground. I just thought it would make a good movie. So I wrote a script and started rolling the rock up many mountains, rolling that damn rock to Cleveland to meet potential investors, to lunch in the executive dining room at Warner Brothers with a sitcom producer. Camus the Stranger was overwhelmed by the sunlight on an Algerian beach. I was overwhelmed by the sunlight in Malibu. It was only when I was on the set in the middle of filming Notes that I experienced the emotional charge of the underground man squandering the one chance at love in his life. I had my own private existential moment behind the camera, just as the underground man had his in front of the camera. Mine was an almost out-of-body experience. What am I doing here on this soundstage in the San Fernando Valley filming this profoundly unsettling story? There really is something to this Dostoevsky guy. But I hadn't spent much time thinking about Notes from Underground as an existential film until I was asked to speak about existential filmmaking on Radio 3. And the girl debate partner I tried to impress with a copy of Being and Nothingness? She's now a professor of Russian literature. For Camus, the key moment for Sisyphus is that moment after the rock has rolled back down to the bottom of the mountain, the moment when he must decide to clamber back down to fetch the rock. Sisyphus is heroic because he feels joy in this moment of decision to roll that rock back up to the mountaintop. 14 minutes, the existential limit of my finite time on Radio 3. And if the piece is short, just add a hunk of existential silence. Excuse me, but I've got a rock to go push.